From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, pastors in Hong Kong who have spoken out against China's efforts to undercut that country's human rights and political and religious freedoms could face arrest and possible extradition to China. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton, a member of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, is here in just a moment. And on Friday, the Department of Justice made clear the administration was not yielding to the court's redefinition of the word sex when they filed a statement of interest in Idaho federal court, in Idaho federal court, defending the state's Fairness in Women's Sports Act. Assistant Attorney General Eric Dryban has the details a little later here on Washington Watch. And YouTube is censoring his personal story of how he regretted his transgender life, calling it hate speech. Why? Walt Heyer, the man whose story was censored, is here to explain. Also, what are we to believe about the threat of the coronavirus? Are the cases going down? Are they going up? Is there a second wave coming? How do we separate fact from convenient fiction that the media seems to be spreading? We'll talk about it with Dr. Catherine O'Neill, the infectious disease specialist at Our Lady of the Lake Regional Medical Center. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. And folks, once again this week, we are coming down to the end of our fiscal year. And I want to thank all of those who have partnered with us, not just in the last week, but throughout the course of the year, making Washington Watch possible. We're bumping up close to 400 stations across the nation. And we're here in Washington, D.C., each and every day representing your values, defending faith, family, and freedom. And we can only do that because of folks like you. We receive no government money, none whatsoever. And we're here because of generous partners like you all across America who care about their families, care about the future of this country. And so because of the generosity of some of our supporters, they've put forward a $1 million challenge so that your gift is effectively doubled. And I've got folks standing by today, members of our team, ready to take your phone calls, 800-225-4008. If you can make a contribution, partner with us. Again, that number, 800-225-4008. Or, as always, you can go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, taking place right now in Hong Kong this week, I would say legislature there, but they've become puppets for China. They're considering the adoption of a new controversial national security law that has been proposed by China, pushed forward, and it would cover four categories of crimes. And a part of what we've seen happen in Hong Kong in the last year, where you've had these protests, where you've had people speaking out for freedom, trying to defend the human rights laws that Hong Kong has and the freedoms that they protect, many of these leaders could be charged with crimes and extradited to China, many of them pastors. Joining me now to talk more about this is Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton. He's a member of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, it's good to be back on with you again, and thank you for highlighting the threat to liberty, including religious liberty, that brave Hong Kongers face because of the Chinese Communist Party's latest treachery.
I mean, this is all kind of connected. You know, the coronavirus, a lot of people distracted. I mean, we've got our issues here at home, but they're not slowing down on their moves toward Hong Kong and the undercutting of those freedoms that Hong Kong has enjoyed.
I think there can be little doubt that Xi Jinping and the Chinese communists that rule in Beijing are using the cover of this pandemic, which they unleashed on the world, to take action against Hong Kong, to take aggressive action against India high in the Himalayas, where they've killed more than 20 Indian soldiers, and to continue to rattle sabers towards countries on the South China Sea. But Hong Kong is probably the most consequential, Tony. In some ways, it reminds me of Hitler's remilitarization of the Rhineland in the early 1930s, a time when he was relatively weak and the West could have stood up to him and stopped him very easily. But they simply didn't have the courage to do so. China is in gross violation of its commitment to the people of Hong Kong to maintain the one country, two systems approach, as well as its commitments to the United Kingdom and the civilized world when the United Kingdom ceded sovereignty back to Hong Kong or to Beijing in 1997. That one country, two systems approach was supposed to last 50 years. Here we are, not even halfway to that point, and this law will grossly violate the liberties of Hong Kongers. It will set up an independent judiciary, in effect, to allow Hong Kongers to be extradited to the mainland and possibly sent to political prisons and never heard from again.
I'm glad you set the stage there by going back to the history of this, because I think people lose that in all of this conversation. 1997, this treaty, this agreement reached that within 50 years, then Hong Kong would be back under the Chinese government. But in the meantime, you would have one country but two systems, allowing the freedoms, as you pointed out. Now, let me just ask you this question. For the benefit of our listeners, Senator Cotton, why does it matter if it happens 25 years into this or 50 years into this?
Tony, it's another example of how you cannot trust a communist power. We couldn't trust the Soviet Union. We cannot trust Red China either. They made a basic commitment to preserve something like the status quo in 1997. They're grossly violating that status quo, and they're doing so in a thriving, vibrant, democratic society. Hong Kongers have their own elections for their local legislative councils. They enjoy rights of freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of worship, many other rights that we sometimes take for granted, but the subjects of communist China and mainland China certainly don't take for granted. If those rights are taken away, all of those brave Hong Kongers, the teenagers and the 20-somethings who have been out in the street protesting over the last year against the last effort to seize these rights, the pastors and the bishops, who are leading their flocks in Hong Kong, all face grave consequences. We see how Beijing treats Christians on the mainland, right, smashing churches or breaking into and busting up the so-called house churches where Christians try to worship our God. That's not the way it works in Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, they openly worship. They have the right to practice their religion as they see fit, just like they have the right to protest in the streets or to speak their minds or to publish their opinions. This so-called national security law is so broad that it will allow Beijing to essentially crack down on all of those rights and ultimately imprison back on the mainland anyone who tries to practice them.
So the separation of the two systems is in name only, because Beijing will be calling all of the shots. In fact, they'll be setting up an office there to oversee what takes place in Hong Kong, and so they will be exercising control, de facto control over the entire country. But is it not also a part of the thinking? 50 years, you have as you pointed out, a vibrant democracy, blossoming economy. That by allowing those two countries, one country but two systems, I should say, but the different approaches, that in part maybe Hong Kong would prompt a lot of the folks in China to long for the same type of freedoms and prosperity that those in Hong Kong are enjoying. And is that not why maybe Hong Kong or Beijing rather is moving to cut this short, because they know the discontent of many, many people in China?
Beijing definitely fears Hong Kong as an outpost of freedom and prosperity among the Chinese people. We know that Chinese people, like people everywhere, long to live in freedom, to live in prosperity, to provide for their families and give their children a better life. They are not allowed to do so by the Communist Party in Beijing. They can see, despite the great firewall around the Chinese internet, occasional glimpses of what it is like in Hong Kong. And that's why China, especially under Xi Jinping, has repeatedly tried to crack down on Hong Kong and to deny them their autonomous status in violation of China's international commitments. They failed before, just like they failed last summer. They are now using the cover of this pandemic to crack down in Hong Kong, and they think they can get away with it. And they may even be willing to accept the dire economic consequences the civilized world will impose on them, precisely to avoid that political risk of Hong Kong being a shining example to mainland Chinese of what it would be like to live with freedom and not under the thumb of the Chinese Communist Party.
Now, in addition to actually seeing some of the overseeing some of the prosecutions of crimes, they will also, under this new rule, this new law, oversee education as it pertains in the public schools as it pertains to national security. Of course, that's a very broad umbrella. What is the United States, what are other countries doing to address this breach of agreement between China and the international community?
Yeah. Tony, I think it would be better said that they will be allowed to oversee re-education, because that is exactly what Beijing intends to do, as they've done with other persecuted minorities in mainland China, is to re-educate, especially the youth of Hong Kong, and turn them against democracy, against freedom. You mentioned they'll set up a special office, because the Office for Preservation of National Security, an Orwellian name, if there ever was one. And while some of these terms may seem innocuous, like secession or subversion of state power, terrorism, they also talk about collusion with foreign or external forces to endanger national security. Remember, the democracy protests last summer, Beijing considered to be terrorism or collusion with foreign forces. If a ministry wants to go to Hong Kong and try to convert followers to Christ, is that colluding with a foreign power? Does that expose every person in Hong Kong to deport or extradition to the mainland and criminal charges to be put in a political prison? These are all of the risks that Hong Kongers now face. So what the United States has already announced is that we will no longer give Hong Kong the special trading status it currently receives under U.S. trade law. We're not going to allow Chinese oligarchs and princelings to continue to get rich off of Hong Kong if they are not respecting the rights of Hong Kongers. What I have called for the president to do as well is to help prioritize through our refugee system the admission to the United States of Hong Kongers who face persecution because they protested for democracy, because they lead churches or ministries. Now, the refugee system has been abused in some cases in recent years, but the classic reason that we have a refugee system in the first place is to grant refuge to those fleeing political and religious persecution of exactly the kind that Hong Kongers face. And we should work with all of our allies in Taiwan, in Japan, in the Philippines, in Australia, to help those Hong Kongers as well. I commend the United Kingdom, by the way, for giving up to 300,000 Hong Kongers refuge in the UK.
Yeah, this would be a great use of that provision of our law, because you are absolutely right. Those folks will be prime targets by the Chinese communist. Senator Tom Cotton, as always, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for keeping an eye on what is happening around the world while we tend to be a little distracted by what's happening here domestically. These issues matter in the long run. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, more Washington Watch to come on the other side of the break. We're going to be talking with Assistant Attorney General Eric Dreiben. The administration not backing away from sticking to the definition of sex as it pertains to women's sports. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, we've got team members standing by to take your phone calls. If you'd like to join with us as we come to the end of our fiscal year to partner with the Family Research Council and Washington Watch to ensure that this program continues to go out across the country. The phone number, 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. 4008, or as always, you can go to TonyPerkins.com. But again, just reminding you, this program is made possible because of folks like you partnering with us across the country. We receive no government money. We're all funded 100% by folks like you across the country that care deeply about faith, family, and freedom. All right, where is the starting line, or I guess I should ask, where is the finishing line for those pushing transgenderism in America? Last week, the Supreme Court redefined the meaning of the word sex as it applied to employment. No longer does it simply mean a biological male or female. But what about for the purposes of sports? Well, the court said that they would leave other matters like sports, religious freedom, for another day. But last week, the Department of Justice weighed in on the topic in the state of Idaho, filing a statement of interest in federal court in support of Idaho's Fairness in Women's Sports Act. Joining me now to talk about this is the Department of Justice Attorney, Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, Eric Dryband. Eric, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hello, Tony. Thank you for having me back.
Okay, Eric, I'm going to let you just lay this out. The Department of Justice filing a statement of interest in federal court in support of a law passed by the Idaho legislature, signed into law by the governor, and then you have the ACLU and others threatening to sue the state over this law that simply says women's sports are for women.
That's correct. So what happened here, Tony, is that at the end of March, as you said, the governor of Idaho signed into law the Fairness of Women's Sports Act. And what that law does is it essentially creates teams for boys or men and girls or women. And in particular, it says that athletic teams or sports designated for females, women, or girls shall not be open to students of the male sex. So what happened was an individual who is transgender, that is biological male and identifies as female, and another individual who's a biologically female have sued the state of Idaho, and they claim that the Idaho law violates the Constitution of the United States. So we last week filed, as you said, a statement of interest in which we explained to the and the case is pending in federal court, and so we filed in federal court and we explained that this Idaho law, the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, in fact complies with the Constitution's protections, and that in fact the Constitution enables states like Idaho to have separate sex-specific teams.
And if I'm not mistaken, the whole purpose, going back to the adoption, I think it's Title IX, was to provide for opportunities for women, sports being one of those opportunities in education. And so this is consistent where the law has been, is it not?
Yeah, now this case, at least in terms of, yes, in a sense, the Title IX is a federal law passed by Congress in the early 1970s that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex in education. And so it's a statute enacted by Congress. It still governs any institution that receives federal money and prohibits sex discrimination. In the Idaho case, what is currently pending before the court is a challenge under the Constitution of the United States. In other words, the plaintiffs in that case claim that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which was enacted in 1868, just after the Civil War, that amendment does not permit Idaho to enact a law that designates athletic teams limited to females, women or girls. Our filing took issue with that, in that we explained that under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, in fact, the state of Idaho is authorized to do that. So the Title IX question is not currently presented before the federal court in that case, but it may come up later. It is part of the plaintiff's claim. It's just not currently pending before the court.
So this is this the first case of its kind that has gotten to this point?
It's the first case that I'm aware of where there's a challenge to a state law of this sort. There have been other claims. The opposite kind of claim pending in the state of Connecticut. In that state, Connecticut assigns athletes to teams based on their gender identity. So Connecticut has the exact opposite policy as Idaho has enacted here, and there is a lawsuit there pending challenging the Connecticut law under Title IX.
So, Eric Drybin, what do you see as the progression here? Is this something that will be settled there at the federal court, or is this something in Idaho, or is this another one of those cases that's going to end up before the Supreme Court?
Well, I think eventually, if not this particular case, I think the issue and the issues of gender identity and athletics, I think eventually will go to the Supreme Court of the United States. I don't know whether it will go up in this case. Right now, the case is pending before a federal judge in Idaho, and from there would go to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, and then from there to the Supreme Court if it continues to be, contested.
Yeah, I think, once the court has gone down this path like they did last week, it's just kind of hard to have separate definitions of sex in different cases, I would think. So this has complicated things quite a bit. But here, again, we see the Department of Justice standing on behalf of the states that are duly enacting laws that, protect women in sports. So we certainly commend you for that. I hope it turns out well. It's quite frankly just troubling to see what's happening in our country today.
Well, Tony, I mean, the Supreme Court in earlier cases has recognized that there are physiological differences between males and females and that those differences are enduring. And certainly, as Attorney General Barr said, under the Constitution, the equal protections that the Constitution recognizes, at least we argued in our papers, allows Idaho to recognize these differences, and that's what they've done here with respect to athletics.
Well, we appreciate you defending their right to do that. Eric Drybin, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks for stopping by.
Okay, thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, I'm going to know what you think. Do you agree with the Attorney General, Bill Barr, his statement that allowing biological males to compete in all female sports is fundamentally unfair to female athletes? We're going to talk about that next. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at standcourageous.com. That's standcourageous.com.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
All right, I didn't get my entire sentence out there before we ran out of time. I'm going to put a poll question out today to ask you this question I asked going into the break. Do you agree with the Attorney General, William Barr, his statement that, quote, allowing biological males to compete in all female sports is fundamentally unfair to female athletes? Do you agree with him or do you disagree with him? Text the word radio to 53445. That's radio, the word radio, to 53445, and you can participate in the poll. You know, it seems like common sense to me, but common sense is not in common supply these days. All right, as we were just talking about, a lot of confusion involved in the realm of transgenderism. What makes a man? What makes a woman? Should we be listening to children who are demanding to take puberty blockers? Should we deny their parents the right to speak into the issue? What's interesting here is, in fact, my next guest has been on the program before, but he spoke recently, well, it's been last fall, about his experience as a transgendered male, he was a male, became a female, and then came back. But he talked about his regrets. And YouTube declared his personal story hate speech and took it down. Joining me now to talk about it is Walt Heyer. He is speaker, author, and a publisher of sexchangeregret.com, which is his blog, walthyer.com. He shares his own story of regret seeking approval through his gender identity. Walt, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, thanks. It's nice to be on.
Well, Walt, let me just ask you this. Why is YouTube taking your story, your thoughts about your life and what you've been through, and labeling it hate speech?
Because millions of people were starting to watch it, and they didn't want them to hear the truth. If it wasn't a popular video, they probably wouldn't have done much of anything, but it started getting a lot of views. And so once it crossed the million mark, I think they started to get alarmed. So, you know, I was a kid that went through this. So I you know, I was speaking from my heart. I wasn't being critical as much as I was being given advice on the fact that what we know is if children are left alone and do not give them hormone blockers and give them a new identity and change their clothing, that between 80 to 95% of them will actually grow out of it. So my thought was, and what I was speaking to, was the fact that when you introduce puberty blockers to a kid and begin to lock him into an identity that he otherwise might just grow out of if we left him alone.
But, and I agree with all that. That's all true. It's all proven. The facts, the statistics are proven out. But here's my concern here, Walt Heyer, is that this is your story. It's your story.
Right.
Why does everybody get their story except for those whose story doesn't fit the narrative that they want to tell?
Well, you know, they've got a few people at YouTube who decide what's hate speech and who can speak and who can't speak, and I'm not one of the approved people at YouTube. You know, the problem is the truth is offensive to some people. And I speak the truth, and so they pulled it down. And not only that, probably even more egregious than just taking down my video, that was an entire day of doctors and endocrinologists and specialists that were included in this conference. They took all of them down because of my video, not just mine. They took them all off of YouTube.
But I would also say, because I know your story, Walt, your
right.
story in being able to tell your story and the pain associated with that story is answering the questions that many people have. And as a result, that truth that you pointed to is making them free. They're being freed from the direction that they're being driven to by the popular culture. It's a story that
That's
needs to
exactly
be told.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. But they don't want people to be freed from this. This is, you know, there's a lot of political power behind the transgender movement. There's a lot of money behind the movement. And I interfere with that. I go against the grain on this. I'm not somebody that waves the rainbow flag for changing kids' genders or even for that matter, adults. I have had as many as 350,000 people come to my website, sexchangeregret.com. Part of them are just curious, but a lot of them are in pain. And right. I've worked literally now with thousands of individuals who've gone through this, and they regret it. And they don't want people to know that people who go through this process do not stay transgender. You're a transgender until such time as you change your mind and detransition. I work with the people who regret it, which usually comes between 3 and 15 years after making the change. But people do not stay transgender.
And Walt Heyer, you're not alone. There's more Walt Heyers out there who have gone through this process and want to tell their stories.
That's
Walt,
right.
As always, great to have you on the program. Thank you for your courage and your boldness and for telling your story so that others don't have to live it. Thanks so much.
Thank you for letting me share it. I appreciate it.
All right. Walt Heyer, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. Don't go away. More Washington Watch coming up on the other side of this break.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
I'm Tony Perkins, your host, and you're listening to Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. And again, let me remind you, we've got team members standing by to take your phone calls if you'd like to partner with us to make sure Washington Watch continues each and every day, Monday through Friday. The phone number, 800-225-4008, that's 800-225-4008. We've got some generous partners that have put forth a $1 million challenge so that your gift today will double the impact in advancing faith, family, and freedom. Again, that number, 800-225-4008, or you can go to tonyperkins.com. All right, trying to figure out what to make of the headlines. I mean, you see one day you see a drop in the number of coronavirus cases. The next day they're up. The media is saying, well, they're down, but they could be up. Well, yeah, sure. What do we make of this? Personally, I think there's a lot of media hype and spin, and I think there's having been a reporter, we used to have a saying in the newsroom: if it bleeds, it leads. It was always trying to scare people, and it just keeping things churned up. The problem is that sometimes there are real problems that need to be addressed, and it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. If you keep saying these things over and over, people stop listening. And I'm afraid that might be where we are when it comes to the coronavirus, because I don't think the threat's completely gone, but we've heard it so much, so often, that, quite frankly, a lot of people aren't paying attention. Joining me now to talk about where we are, where we are going, and where we need to be is the infectious disease expert and chief medical officer at Our Lady of the Lake Regional Medical Center in my hometown of Baton Rouge, Dr. Catherine O'Neill. Dr. O'Neill, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Dr. O'Neill, today in Louisiana, the governor there, Governor John Bel Edwards, said that Louisiana is going to stay in phase two for another 28 days, I believe, saying that we've had a rise in cases. Certainly, you know what's happening in Louisiana, but you have your eye on what's happening across the country as well. Where do we stand? The new cases, is it the result of better testing, widespread testing? Is there a bump in the number of cases? What's actually going on?
Right. What we've seen is that the virus is not gone at all. In fact, it continues to just really morph into more of a community spread issue. So if you look at how the virus entered our community, we have no idea how many people were truly positive in that late February to early March period of time. We definitely hit a surge at the end of March and saw a tremendous amount of admissions, still unable to test what that community incidence looked like right before those admissions began. And then we saw a decrease, an absolute decrease, as people stayed at home in all areas of the community. What we're seeing now is that people who are more social, getting out first, not as cautious, are really getting the virus at rapid rates. And we can link that rapid spread to social events, birthday parties, baby showers, bachelor parties, and attending bars, right? So we know that these are places where people are going to talk a lot, they are going to be unmasked, and they spread the virus very quickly. Our concern over the last couple of weeks as we watch our admission rate, which is really our sense of, is this the same that we saw in March, right? Is this just community spread and healthy people, or are we about to be on the precipice of another surge and really sick people coming into the hospital? And what we're seeing on the hospital side is that as patients come in, they tell us, you know, my 18-year-old has it. My wife who works in this facility has it, and I'm the one who's at risk. I'm the diabetic. I have mild obesity. I have hypertension. And so we're seeing an increase now over the last week or so in just community cases being admitted. And that's really concerning because that means that not only has it gotten back into the community, but it's starting to hit those vulnerable people who were protecting themselves but can't protect themselves from their family members coming back to the house from their social events.
So we see a large, well, I want to say, I don't want to mischaracterize it, but the age category where we see an increase in the cases is in that younger demographic, 18 to 29, right?
That's right. That's right. And we weren't testing that group in March. So we don't know if that group spurred it first and we just weren't testing that group of individuals because they don't hit the hospital as much, but they may be what begins the surge. And what the disturbing thing is we're seeing those people finally tested because we have enough tests. To your point, the more testing you have, the more you're able to kind of watch this happen. And we have a lot of interest in being able to predict those surges. But behind this young community getting it is now an increase in admissions. And you know, what we cannot do is go back to where we were at the end of March, beginning of April, where we run out of hospital beds. We have got to keep our vulnerable patients safe by continuing to mask. You know, if you're healthy and young, you don't feel like you need to wear a mask because you don't feel like it needs to protect you, but you're wearing the mask to protect your parents, to protect your grandparents. You're walking around next to people who have diabetes every day. And that's what we have to do if we want to continue to reopen the economy, is just to be as safe as possible because we know the spread is continuing.
So we're still learning in this process. As you were saying, that we don't know if that first wave, not that we're out of that first wave, but that back in March, we don't know if that was preceded by this age group of 18 to 29 having it because we didn't test, so we don't have that information.
That's right. We thought it was flu season. That's right. What we do know by looking at the graphs in the different parts of Louisiana, at least, is that we do have an increased trajectory as far as our incidence. So not only are we testing more, we do have a percent positivity that is increasing in certain areas. Our incidence is increasing, which is concerning. We have several regions in Louisiana that are increasing their admissions as well. So, again, we're back on that trend that if we don't turn around, can result in harm.
So that's what there's a number of categories we look at, but those that are being admitted into the hospitals, that's the number that we're really looking at because those are the ones that take up the hospital. I mean, they require hospital care, potentially the ventilators and all of that. So that's the big number that we're really tracking, is it not?
That's right. That's right. And that's the tip of the iceberg. By the time your admissions reach the point that you're concerned, the amount of community spread has become something that takes weeks to knock back down. And so by continuing to talk about the number of cases, while I do agree with you, it gets old because it's just not it's a cry wolf sort of scenario. The number of cases predicts when are those admissions going to go up. And by the time we get to those high admissions, it's too late. You know, then it's taking weeks to settle back down again. And so we really have to be able to predict that better by saying we have too much community spread. We've got to slow it down now.
Yeah, unfortunately, this issue of the coronavirus has merged with politics, and so there's this constant 24/7 news cycle where this is being used as a, in some cases, a political tool, and I think that's caused some just to turn a deaf ear to it. But let me just repeat what I hear you saying. Is that there is a continued threat here, a risk. We saw a decrease as a result of people basically self-quarantining and the stay-at-home orders. Now going forward, until we have a vaccine and we can build up the immunity, people need to protect the at-risk populations by wearing masks and keeping social distance. Is that accurate?
That is exactly accurate. And we cannot forget that the at-risk populations are in our homes right now. They're not people who are over 70. The people that we've admitted in the last week are people in their 40s, 50s, early 60s with diabetes, with obesity, which is very common in the United States and very common in Louisiana. And we don't consider it to be an adverse health modifier, but in this disease it is. And so we're admitting our neighbors whose kids are being very social right now. And so to do that, it's not just let me distance or wear my mask at the grocery store. You really have to start to think about what you do in your personal life and how you treat your neighbor or your family member.
So this is about thinking about other people and doing what's in their best interest.
This is for your community.
Yeah.
We have to really think about what our community looks like for us and whether we want the economy in our community to grow. And if we want that economy to grow, we have got to put masks on. We've got to stay away from people. Just be very deliberate in your social activities. And we did that. We did that very successfully. But I think we've gotten a little bit ahead of ourselves, and we have to back up just a little, and mostly in that social interaction.
Yeah, well, I could make a list of a few people I don't really want to be around, but most people are
around. That's right.
How long, just, you know, Dr. O'Neill, to give people a sense of hope here, because I think there was a lot of pent-up, you know, especially Louisiana, we're social people. We like to be out. We like to be with people. We like to be at church. We like to go. How long are we in this phase? I mean, how long before life does return to normal?
I'm not an optimist when we talk about these things. I am definitely a pessimist. I consider 2020 the year of social distancing and masking and a new way of life. And I have enjoyed my church service from my home, not because I don't think it's safe to go to church. I absolutely do, but I want to make room for our elders who I know they want to be there. And I'm happy to watch it on my internet. And so if I go a couple times this year, as long as I have access, I'm happy to do that. And I think that we all have to just stretch a little bit for the rest of this year because I don't see an out soon. But I have my own small social circle, and I know who's quarantining. And we have, you know, we have social interactions, but we do it in smaller groups so that we can stay away from each other in the house. And I think all of those things, if you do it deliberately, I'm not going to miss Sunday dinner with my mom or dad, but we might sit outside for most of that time. You know, so we keep our traditions. If we're just a little bit more deliberate about those things, we're 50% there, you know.
Yeah. And as we move toward a vaccine, that obviously is going to help. But also, I guess, as more people, especially in the younger categories, as they, of course, this is maybe an area we're not completely familiar with yet, but as they build up, as they have it, they have the antibodies, does that not contribute to what is called the herd immunity?
Right. We believe that we can develop herd immunity. There's not a lot known about it for COVID-19 yet. For most viruses, there is some herd immunity. How long it lasts is debatable, and that's why we hope for a vaccine as well. But what's been shocking about places like New York and New Orleans is that as bad as that surge got, it's amazing how few of the population was actually infected. You know, we are a very large population of people, and we're a long way from herd immunity.
Hmm. Caution is the word. So
it is. It is.
Be cautious. Take care of your neighbor.
Think about your neighbor. That's right. That's right.
All right. Dr. O'Neill, as always, thanks for taking time to join us today. You're busy. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Dr. Catherine O'Neill, infectious disease expert and chief medical officer at Our Lady of the Lake Regional Medical Center in my hometown of Baton Rouge. And, you know, it's I'll be very candid. I don't like wearing the mask. I feel like a bank robber or something. But I do think we've got to be – here's what gets me is the media, and I made reference to this earlier, just – It's almost like crying wolf. And I saw a headline last week that said, COVID-19 cases decline but could increase. Well, certainly they could increase. But it's like it's got to have this negative spin on everything. Okay, we have a problem. Let's deal with it. We've got this coronavirus, but let's be realistic. Let's be prudent. And I think, let's think about those vulnerable populations. But I can tell you this. I don't think America will go for another round of stay-at-home orders. So I think we've got to think of it. We've got to take the responsibility to protect the vulnerable elements of our community so that the rest of society can function. And that means we've got to, that makes some sacrifices. But I like Dr. O'Neill's, modifications because I think it's important that families spend time together. We gathered together yesterday as a family with my kids and my father and parents and brothers and sisters and for Father's Day. And those things are important. Well, we did it outside, and we, for the most part, kept our distance. And it's different way of life, but I think – I think this is – hopefully this is passing. I think it is. Once we get to the vaccine, a lot of smart people working on that. And if it's like other diseases of this nature, we will build up eventually some immunity to it. We've got to keep our eye on the positive, the optimistic. By all means, people, don't allow the media to scare you and frighten you. The last thing we need is to be a fearful people. Prudent people, taking the appropriate precautions, yes, absolutely. But being fearful and operating out of fear, no. That's the worst thing we can do. And so, in part, I quite frankly encourage you to turn off the media as they are constantly trying to scare people. If it's not... the coronavirus, it'll be something else. It's the media is trying to basically scare people into a sense of almost paralysis, mental, emotional paralysis. Easier to control that way. All right, out of time. The Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow, and I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you once again with the encouraging, I forgot to give you the results of the poll. I'll have to do that tomorrow. All right, in the meantime, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.